Meeting to order. Are there any public comments relative to agenda items? This is a, excuse me, this is a special meeting of Board of Finance, Wednesday, April 28th. Are there any public comments relative to agenda items, of which there is only one?
Mr. Chairman, this is Judy Allen. This is Judy Allen. Quick question. Can you make public the contents of the consent decree? That's all I need. Thank you.
I'm sure that at some point the whole consent decree is going to be public, but I'd have to refer that to Attorney Stone.
Yeah, we could, if I might, Mr. Chairman, we're going to talk generally about the terms of the consent decree or draft proposed consent decree as it relates to the fine. Disclosing the whole of the consent decree at this point is a little premature. So, certainly after Monday's meeting, it may be available, but not as of today.
Okay, I hope that answers your question.
Yes, thank you.
Are there any other public comments relative to agenda items? Okay, hearing none. We have, I just got a text from Awet saying that he is going to join the meeting. So hopefully that's happening right now.
Hello, Awet, the guy's here.
There he is. Thank you, Awet. So, John, we have a quorum now. Is that correct?
Yes, we do.
All right, so we can move on to item number two. I'm sorry, item number three, approval of the meeting minutes of March 24th, 2021. Is there a motion?
I move to approve the minutes, I vote.
Is there a second? Motion's made and seconded. Are there any additions, deletions, or corrections? Hearing none, all in favor of accepting the minutes as they are?
Aye.
Signify by saying aye.
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 Okay. Thank you. Item number four. Consideration and potential action regarding the authorization for our Chief Executive Officer to make payment of penalty included in sewage sludge incinerators consent decree. And we have this listed as a possible executive session. I'd like to, I know we sent out an agenda and you can read basically what went out with the agenda. This was before the Public Works Committee yesterday and received approval. I'm not sure who wants to describe this for members who need a little refresher on what this was about, or and if they have any questions, I'll leave it up to our counsel to decide whether they can be answered without going into executive session. So between Scott and Chris, is there someone who wants to just explain briefly what this
and I'll certainly I have a very brief comment, and I'll certainly defer to Mr. Jellison, but I do want to introduce Jeff Knight. And just before I do that, just by way of very brief background, you all have, as the chairman pointed out, an agenda memo that was sent out by District Counsel's office, which sets out in as an overview, but with enough specificity, why are you meeting today? And it concerns the proposed fine to be assessed by EPA and the Department of Justice against the NBC for what they consider to be noncompliance with certain aspects of EPA's regulations as it relates to the incinerators that we have down on Brainerd Road. These incinerators go back to the early 70s, and they have consistently maintained compliance with all EPA regulations concerning emissions and the processes that we must follow with those incinerators. The EPA, in its wisdom, changed the rules, however, in 2014 for new incinerators or old incinerators who make capital improvements to their incinerators in an amount of monies at least 50% of what was the original construction cost. So you can imagine with inflation, et cetera, it doesn't take that long to get up to that 50% level. With that, we had the an enforcement action by EPA. We had negotiations and discussions for many years about whether the new rules even applied to the NDC. As it turns out, even though but for one instance of noncompliance, all of our incinerators complied, but we do plan on and engage in additional capital improvements, which will bring at least one of the incinerators beyond the 50% level. So we started constructive discussions with EPA about timing of compliance, milestones that we must reach in order to assure compliance, and also EPA's suggested fine for what they consider to be prior violations. The fines, as Jeff Attorney Knight's going to point out, the fines could have been as high as several million dollars. EPA started out with a post fine of almost $400,000. We were able to convince them to reduce that fine or proposed fine to $298,000. The Board of Public Works, as the chairman pointed out, approved the consent order with that fine yesterday. It's going to the full board on Monday. But we need authorization from this board for the payment of the monies, application of the monies for that payment. So that's the overview. Jeff Knight is here to answer any specific questions you might have about the fine specifically or generally about the consent order. And I also know Scott had some insights yesterday before the Public Works Bureau, and they have some comments as well.
I'd like to ask Scott, just for the benefit of the commissioners and citizen members, Scott, if you would just explain what my understanding is that we decided to go ahead with making the repairs, even though they would be considered new after that and we'd have to comply and there would be a cost associated with achieving compliance. I know that you and staff felt that there was an opportunity if we kept these going and that there might be an opportunity for revenue in the future for using the incinerator. My understanding is that there already has been. So maybe, Scott, you can just explain that the penalty that we may pay could at some point be offset by the revenues that we generate from these
Mr. Chairman, and then I'll lead up the history here to how we brought Jeff Knight in. This started back in 2008. 2008, the state of Connecticut DEEP used to regulate the emissions of the incinerators because it was considered solid waste. So DEEP, through its delegation from EPA, oversaw the air emissions as it relates to the incineration process. And there was scuttlebutt in 2008 that the state of Connecticut was going to give that authority up to EPA. And ironically, it was in part because Gina McCarthy, who used to be the commissioner of the state of Connecticut DEEP, actually became the administrator of EPA. So ironically, between 2008 and 2010, this emissions went to the authority of EPA. In 2010, we were really being pushed by DEEP and EPA to really start to look at, mercury equipment, because we're in the process, to your point, in the process of renovating the three incinerators. We have three incinerators, as Chris mentioned, built in the 70s, but the third incinerator hadn't really operated in a long time. And the problem that we had was with two operating, and we're permitted only to operate two at any one given time, but the problem with having only two is when we had to take one down for maintenance, we were left with losing revenue. Obviously, the important part of the incineration is keeping them running, as you can imagine, as long as possible, and shut down a hot piece of equipment as large as that. The cool down period, the warm up period is you're losing money. And so the incentive for us was to get the third incinerator operational, so that way we would have three. We would operate two at any one given time. We'd be able to bring one down and turn one back on and not lose any revenue. And the purpose for that was, as you mentioned, we were about in the planning to build a heat recovery system that presently we generate about $1.8, almost $2 million a year in revenue from. And so this was the incinerator improvements were a part of the plan for the heat recovery plant to work as efficiently as possible. With a heat recovery plant, you do not want it shutting down. You want it to operate all the time. And so in this 2010 timeframe, we started seeing, and through NACWA, which we were members of, the National Organization of Wastewater Agencies, we were very concerned about the direction that EPA was going and how stringent they were becoming involving setting the new limits for new incineration and old incinerators. And really the goal was, I think EPA's goal was to eliminate all incineration because they felt digesting sludge was a more healthy way to deal with incineration of sludge until the nasty word PFAS came into play. But through that process, really through 2010 and 2016, we were trying to figure out whether or not this law and this rule applied to us as an existing agency. And in my association as a member of NACWA, Jeff Knight was engaged by NACWA on behalf of not just the state of Connecticut, but all 50 states to really fight back and push back on this rule and to really question their EPA's ability to do what they were doing. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Jeff, and then Jeff, you can fill in the rest of the story.
Great. Thank you, Scott. Nice to meet everyone. So I'm going to Clean Air Act Specialist Environmental Lawyer Partner at Pillsbury Winthrop Shaw Pittman in Washington, D.C., and have represented NACWA for a number of years and the Metropolitan District for a number of years. As Scott said, I handled the rulemaking when EPA was doing the original rulemaking for sewage sludge incineration in the 2009 and 10 frame. When the rule went into effect in early 2016, EPA's position was that although the district's three incinerators were clearly older than the, quote, definition of a new incinerator under the rule, EPA's position was that due to various projects and upgrades undertaken over the years, that all three incinerators had exceeded the 50% modification threshold. It was the district's position that that was not correct at that time. And we submitted a lot of technical and other information to EPA in order to get them a clearer picture of the true regulatory status of the three incinerators. We had those discussions for a number of years, beginning in early January 2017. But during the course of those discussions, what became apparent both to the legal and technical teams was that other planned projects for the incinerators were going to push all three of them very, very close to the 50% modification threshold, and that whether or not EPA was right that they were already over that threshold, they would soon be over that threshold, and therefore it was in the district's interest to get a clear schedule to come into compliance with the new source standards, and then also to mitigate any potential civil penalty exposure from EPA's enforcement action. So as Chris and Scott mentioned, the civil penalty is $298,000, which is a very small fraction of the several millions of dollars, which is potentially could be sought by EPA if they were to move forward with an enforcement action. EPA was willing to negotiate a much smaller penalty amount based on arguments that we made under their Clean Air Act civil penalty policy, which ultimately they accepted, which is how we came to the $298,000 number. Again, right now, Department of Justice Management is currently reviewing to approve the consent decree, but we expect that approval in a matter of days. And so we are at a point, obviously, to make final decisions, and then the consent decree, if finalized by the parties, would be served with the court, and the court would enter the consent decree and approve it, and then all of the other aspects of the consent decree, the district would move forward, complying with its schedule to bring all three incinerators, to demonstrate that all three incinerators comply with the new source standards. Scott, happy to answer
any questions. I just want to add a little more, because we talked a lot about this yesterday, and there's a lot of details here, but in this process, as Jeff mentioned, you know, not only did we negotiating, because one of our biggest arguments was really, you know, challenging, as Jeff helped us tremendously challenge the actual limits that were being applied to the MDC and whether or not we were actually even complying with the limits as we disagreed with them. And we went through an exercise of actually doing our own testing and found that two out of our three actually met the new standards, believe it or not. And as Tom mentioned yesterday, the standard for a CO was 3,800 parts per million. And originally under the old permit and the new permit for the SSI rule is 52. And we actually met that with a lot of hard work. So the point to make is during this whole discussion with EPA utilizing Jeff Knight, we were actually working directly with EPA and actually installing and doing things and improvements within the system, the technology, to actually reduce our emissions to meet the standards without any major investments. The thing that I said yesterday, which is really important, is if we would have blindly accepted the rule in 2010 and through 2016, like some had, we would have installed millions and millions of dollars of equipment that probably, like mercury equipment, we now know that we don't need the mercury controls that we initially thought the rule was going to impose on the MDC incinerators. And the facts are is that we would have spent, you know, upwards of $10, $15 million on equipment that we didn't need. So Tom Tyler, who's the director of facilities, and his staff, just a tremendous, and our maintenance staff, and our engineers, just a tremendous level of effort between 2010 and 2000, really today, to actually meet and meet the new standards that we didn't think we could meet without any CIP investment, only process changes and some simplistic computerized software to make sure that we can monitor it. The concern that we have in the future CIP work that we need to do is, as Tom mentioned yesterday, is to make sure that we consistently can meet these new standards. So that's the challenge, is we meet them now under two incinerators. We don't want to ever exceed these limits, because if we do, we would be hit with another fine. So we will need to install some additional equipment to make sure that we always every hour of the day meet these new standards. And to the chairman's point, this is really important for the MDC because prior to the incinerators being upgraded and the heat recovery being built, we were making on average about $2.5 million to $3 million a year in revenue from sludge. Today, with all the improvements that Tom Tyler and his staff have made, we are collecting approximately $7.5 million a year. Now, that $7.5 million goes directly to reduce ad valorem. It's a dollar for dollar. Every dollar that we make in sludge removal and sludge revenues, it reduces our town's ad valorem. So as we know, $400,000 is one percentage point on ad valorem. So $7 million divided by, I don't have my calculator, but it's a lot of percentages that if we didn't have that $7 million, that ad valorem would be significantly higher. Back to you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, that was my point, Scott. I really am grateful that you were able to explain that whether or not the negotiated settlement here is close to what we thought it should be or not. I mean, this still with the consent decree and being able to move forward is going to give us the ability to continue to create this revenue stream. And if PFAS in solid waste is going to be determined that it can be treated by burning it, then I think it's going to be even more important that we have the incinerators operating. So,
Mr. Chairman, I've said this before.
Put that together. So, go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I've said this before. It's ironic. It's very ironic. And I've said this in other meetings, but I was at a EPA meeting in February, right before the pandemic, February of 2020, and we were having this very discussion about PFAS and about the hysteria with PFAS and sludge. And the point is that the technical point is when you're burning it, and we don't know this for sure. We don't have any facts. We only know what DEEP has told us. DEEP has said publicly that burning sludge at 1,400 degrees, in fact, removes PFAS. Now, we don't know if that's true or not, but in our meeting in EPA in Boston in February of 2020, we had this very discussion, and there was a lot of communities that were forced to go to digestion, which is a different form of digesting the sludge, so to speak, and it doesn't burn it. It basically pulls off the methane gas off of the sludge, and then you're left with a sludge material that you have to do something with. And across New England, except Connecticut, and I think Rhode Island, you're allowed to land apply that sludge. So digested sludge across the country has been land applied for years. And then when PFAS hit because of the airport in Bradley and the discharge from one of the hangars, the sky came falling down and all kinds of legislation came in, and people across New England started to realize that, oh, my God, we're applying this stuff to our farm fields. And so the ironic part of all of this now is that the SSI rule was intended to get rid of incineration, and it did. It got rid of a lot of incinerators across the country because a lot of incinerators, and I'll use the example of Providence, Rhode Island, Narragansett Bay Commission, they simply closed their incinerators because it was too much work, too much money to try and comply. But now what we're finding is, if DEEP is right, that the only way to get rid of incineration, to get rid of PFAS is to burn it. So EPA is trying to get rid of incineration through regulation, and now they're realizing it may be its best friend. It's just ironic.
Well, like I said, I truly appreciate that you guys were able to, the staff was able to describe what this issue is about and keep it as brief as possible. I do want to make sure that any commissioners or citizen members that have a question regarding this particular issue go ahead and ask it now. The staff can try to provide you with an answer, and I don't believe that we need to go into executive session to do this, but we'll see what the questions are. So are there any questions for staff? Okay, well, like I said, I think the staff did a great job explaining this, so thank you for that. And absent any questions, I think, John, is a motion in order for this, to approve in order for this?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, so is there a motion to approve item number 4?
So moved.
Commissioner Edel, so moved.
So there's a motion to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion approved and second. All right. Is there any discussion or any further questions at all on this issue? Hearing none. Chair asks that all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Are there any opposed? Any abstentions? Hearing none, John, the motion carries unanimously. So. Thank you, and thank the members and the staff. Very important issue to get by. It'll appear, you'll see it again, if you're a commissioner, at the district board meeting on Monday, I believe. So, but thank you. So, item number 5 is opportunity for general public comments. Are there any general public comments? Okay, hearing none. Are there any comments from commissioners or any questions, something other than what we just voted on? I would ask just briefly then, if there isn't anything, John, you know, our next regular agenda, our next regular Board of Finance meeting is, can you just tell us what that schedule is? And there's already a couple things on the agenda. Maybe we can talk about that just so that people know in advance.
Yes, the next Board of Finance meeting, there's a regular Board of Finance meeting scheduled for Wednesday, May 12th at 4 p.m. And the plan is to bring the Raftellis Sewer User Charge Study, have Raftellis present that report to the Board of Finance. And I've confirmed with them they are available at that time.
I also, Mr. Chairman, if I may, we've been working on a couple of things. As we know, we have a model, a cost rate model for the clean water surcharge, and we've had a lot of discussions about that process. The people at CDM who helped create that model with Bob Lamb, we've asked them last year to create the same model for our water and ad valorem rate structure so that we can predict based on what we spend by CIP and maintenance, so we can have a map, so to speak, as to what our water rates and what our ad valorem rates are going to be in the near future, 5-10 years out. So we probably won't be ready for that meeting, Mr. Chairman, but we will be bringing that to the Board of Finance. Ironically, believe it or not, we're in budget season. We're trying to finish up certain things in finance with the audit, but we really are really starting to get ready for for budget season. So we will be bringing some things to you. I would like to talk about the $7 sewer user charge, customer service charge. I'm planning to ask the Raftellis group, since they already have all of the information, a lot of detailed information, to look and see if there's a what justification there is, if any, to increase that rate over a period of time or decrease it. But We're looking at that as part of our presentation to the Board of Finance this coming year as to whether or not there's any justification to raise the $7 to something else. And as we know, is that if we do raise that rate, then it automatically dollar for dollar reduces the ad valorem to the town. So we're going to have that discussion, and we can even, if you'd like, we can even talk a little bit about that when the Raftellus group comes in on next board meeting.
Okay, and I have one question for staff, and then I'll entertain a motion to adjourn. And Scott, my question is, as we did before, I've been working with the consumption rates and for the towns and non-member towns to try to get a better understanding of a couple things, but really of all the surcharges that are on the water rate, including things like the primacy fee and riverfront recapture and the Colebrook arrangement. So, but one of the things that I haven't been able to like completely get the numbers right on is the non-member towns that don't pay the clean water charge. The consumption rate appears to be greater for the customers there. So if we could do a comparison, particularly on the residential side for in the district per customer, you know, annual and outside the district. And the point about this is that if I'm living in South Windsor and I'm not paying the clean water surcharge, I'm not as worried about watering my lawn because I basically have some of the least expensive water rates in the state of Connecticut. So, on my side of the street, because I live right on the town line, I got to worry about paying the clean water charge for every cubic foot of water I water my lawn with. So if you can just do those comparisons to see if they actually, without that rate, I mean, I believe that the clean water charge suppresses consumption or whatever. And so if you can get that together for me, I'd appreciate it. It's not something I can see that easily the way that we've done it. Okay. With that, I'll ask for a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Battle. Motion has been made. Seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Meeting's adjourned. Thank you all very much. Appreciate your time.